When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We come to you just a few hours after Novak Djokovic won his 29th Masters 1000 title, his 64th career title, equaling the haul of Bjorn Borg and Pete Sampras. What names to have already equaled when he's still very much at his peak. He laid down another significant marker ahead of the French Open in just a few weeks' time, and he did it by beating Andy Murray in the final. Myself, David Law, and Catherine Whittaker are here to talk about it. Catherine is in Madrid. Where are you exactly? Are you still overlooking that monstrous Magic Box centre court, Catherine?
I'm not, no. I've retreated to the hotel room that I'm in the city centre. So a bit of a way away from the Kaya Magica. My time there is over for another year.
Over for another year, but a pretty memorable final in the end, wasn't it?
It was memorable. It wasn't what I was expecting at all, the final today. I think to start with, it was... I mean, it felt like deja vu all over again to start with. You know, we had Djokovic come into the press conference yesterday, asked to preview the final with Andy Murray. And the first thing he said was, well, the opening few games and the opening set are going to be the most important thing. And Andy Murray would have known that as well as Novak Djokovic knew it. And yet still... it was that slow start from Andy Murray, which he's just got to find a way to not do that. He's got to find a way to come out and be firing from the word go, a little bit like Kei Nishikori was yesterday. I know he didn't end up winning, but he was absolutely on it from the very first point. But then the match changed completely, and it really, really surprised, I think, everybody that was watching. I think Andy Murray surprised everybody that was watching, and that third set could have been very different. It could. I know 6-3 suggests that that Djokovic was on top throughout, but until he got that break, in fact, there were probably more moments where it felt like Andy Murray was going to come out on top. And that final game, I mean, that was almost a standalone match, wasn't it? 7 breakback points for Murray, and he couldn't take any of them. Most of them he played pretty well on. I think there's a couple that might be keeping him up tonight. But yeah, it was a match that really, really surprised me in a number of ways.
Have to say, it didn't surprise me hugely. I feel as though we've been there a lot over the last couple of years since Andy Murray won Wimbledon. If you think about it, he's lost now 12 of 13 matches against Novak Djokovic. And it seems to me he either loses very straightforwardly in straight sets and it's not much of a contest, or he plays exceptionally well for part of it and can look like the better player at times during the match. If you think back to the French Open semi-final last year, if you think back to the Australian Open final of last year, there have been a number of these matches where he's looked as though he is the stronger physical player, the guy who can overpower Novak Djokovic when he's really hitting the ball out of the centre of the racket. But the same result keeps happening. And I think that you're quite right about the start. But I actually think now the start is basically becoming a Novak Djokovic trademark. He has beaten Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal and Andy Murray In the first set he played against them, in the first three matches of the year he played against them, he beat them all 6-1. And he raced out to 6-2 today. And yes, Murray didn't start as well as he could have done, but Djokovic just doesn't let you.
Yeah, I mean, that was Andy Murray's story as well. That was his take on it. But it's impossible to diagnose how much of it is Djokovic being brilliant and how much of it is Andy Murray not coming out firing. But for me, he seemed to grow a couple of inches in the second set. There was more muscle on the ball. There was a sort of, there were more arrow-like quality on. He was hitting a lot deeper. There was a lot more purpose on the ball. I really saw a difference in the way Murray was hitting the ball between the first and the second set. And yes, some of that can be put down to Djokovic taking the time away from him earlier in that first set. But then, you know, the stats don't lie. His first serve percentage was low to start the match. It finished really well. He finished at 71% first serves in, and that was because he served at around about 80% or more for the end of the first set and the subsequent two sets. But to start with, you know, I think he got one first serve in that opening game and he was broken. Not good enough. And that is absolutely in his own hands. So yes, Djokovic was brilliant, but you've got to give yourself the best possible chance. And I don't think Murray did that today.
No, well, I think that's certainly fair enough in terms of that first set. I just feel that, generally speaking, Djokovic now is raising his level when he plays the biggest matches, which is what the very great champions of the sport do. He's almost able to cruise to the finals a lot of the time these days, and then when he gets there, he finds another gear altogether, and he seems to find an even greater gear when it is Federer, Nadal or Murray who's his opponent in those finals. It will be interesting to see what happens if he were to play Stan Wawrinka in the next couple of weeks, either in Rome or in Roland Garros, and see whether there's anything Stan can do about it. But he obviously needs to have one of his great days, and you never quite know what you're going to get from Stan Wawrinka, do you? So,
well, it's been a while since we've seen a great day from him, that's for sure. But what I would say, the only last thing I would say about the match is, in terms of crumbs of comfort for the best of the rest, he did get nervous today. He did see really visible signs of nerves and signs of tension, and there have been points in the past year or so with Djokovic where he's looked so invincible, he's looked like he hasn't suffered from nerves or tension in the way that other players do. Of course he does, but he hasn't shown any evidence of it on the court, and for me that's at least a tiny chink in the armour, and a chink which might grow a bit bigger at the French Open, where he's likely to be feeling more nerves and more tension than anywhere else in the world at any other moment in time. So it's something. It's something for someone to cling to when they walk onto the court to face him. It's not much, but it's something.
She's got that straw and she's going to clutch it. There was a very nice bit of sportsmanship between the two players. Andy Murray basically disputing a time violation given to Novak Djokovic by the umpire. Andy Murray was saying, why have you given him that? I mean, I wasn't ready to receive his serve. It's not his fault, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah, he's a fantastic sportsman, isn't he, Andy Murray? You can't fault that for a second. I think I do have sympathy, though, having said that, with the umpires over the time violation situation, because I don't think they can do right for doing wrong, really. They sort of need to try and make a point, but there's such little consistency on the matter that they're between a rock and a hard place, really. So I felt a little bit for Mohamed Lahiani, but yeah, credit to Andy Murray.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, Djokovic sent a nice tweet to Andy Murray just to thank him anyway today, which was all very cosy after beating him to smithereens on the tennis court, which is what tennis players tend to do. Just before we get on to talk about the women's final and the tournament we had there, let's just hear from Andy Murray, but first from the champion, Novak Djokovic.
Of course, I did not want to let that service game go, because I know that Andy will capitalize on his opportunities and start to play better if he broke my serve. So I fought very hard, and I'm just glad that I managed to finish that game. Came at the right time. I mean, I had an amazing opening 4 months of the season, then, you know, early exit in Monte Carlo, but it happened for a reason, because I needed some time to really recharge my batteries, and 3 weeks was more than enough to get some freshness and get some new breath. And I came here early, got used to the conditions, and played a really fantastic tournament that will definitely serve as a great confidence boost before Rome and of course French Open, that where I want to arrive in the best possible shape.
He played unbelievable at the start, and like I said yesterday, it's a completely different game, you know, to playing against Rafa. You know, Novak's obviously played significantly flatter, stands much closer to the baseline, he returns much closer to the baseline, so there's less time. And yeah, maybe took me a while to adjust to that, but he started extremely well. I just think I'm definitely moving better, that's for sure, and it makes a huge difference, because like I said, on the other surfaces it's a massive strength of mine, it's a big part of my game. And you know, for a number of years I didn't move well on the clay, and it was, you know, a hindrance, and that makes you uncomfortable. You know, when I was having the problems with my back, it was difficult for me when I was stepping on the court, whereas now, you know, my body feels great, I feel like I'm moving a lot better, so I'm not going on the court sort of a little bit nervous or apprehensive. I believe I can play well on clay now.
So there's Djokovic and Murray. And Catherine, you know, I think after the first set, I just thought, I mean, now this is perhaps something that people have been thinking for months and for years, and this is no great revelation, but after the first set, I suddenly got this real hunch that this is the year. This is the year that Djokovic is going to win the French Open. I can feel it coming. And the rationale behind it, aside from just some silly gut feeling that I have, is the way he's starting matches, the way he's jumping on opponents that should be a great challenge to him. I know Murray managed to muscle his way into the match and make it a contest, but I don't think he's going to let it slip this time, Djokovic. I think this is the year.
I think so too. I thought so last year, though. I agree with you. I think it is, but I also think things can happen. This is my new mantra. Things can happen. I perhaps don't feel quite as sure about it as you, but I'm absolutely predicting that he will win the French Open. How can anybody not? How can anybody not predict him to win anything at the moment? I don't see how you can.
No, I agree with that. I just remember banging on the whole year last year about Nadal, and obviously he's playing better this time than he did last time, but obviously he hadn't lost for so many years is what made me feel that was going to be the ultimately deciding match. Obviously that turned out not to be the case. It was Wawrinka. I don't feel as though, I think the odds are even longer that Lightning will strike twice in that regard, and all the other odds are in Djokovic's favour, but it just still, aside from all that, it still comes down for me to just this feeling that he is able to elevate himself now in the biggest matches and just jump on these guys and just shock them before they've even really got themselves a firm footing in a match. He's a break or two up, I think it's his time.
I mean, I agree with you, and on the subject of Nadal, I know the conditions here in Madrid are a lot less like Roland Garros than are the conditions in Monte Carlo and Rome and Barcelona, for that matter. I know that this is the least accurate barometer, this warm-up tournament for form at Roland Garros, but what I've seen here.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
In actual fact, a lot of what I saw in Monte Carlo, he's made strides, no doubt. But I think if he plays Djokovic in Rome or in Roland Garros, I think he will get taken to task. I have to say, I think he's still really quite a way off. That's my diagnosis. He's made big improvements. He's getting there. He might yet make more improvements. I'm not writing him off completely, but I do think he's still a way off.
Indeed. Now, the women's final, won by Simona Halep, who hasn't had too many results to celebrate of late, but she certainly did this week. That was a cracking run to the title. And from a position where I remember watching her earlier in the week losing, I think she lost a 6-love set a couple of rounds earlier, and she can go walkabout a bit, can Simona Halep, but she's also quite capable of going on and winning the French Open from here.
Yeah, she looked utterly just delighted, relieved to win that title. I think it's no secret, is it, how much she struggled with the expectation of being a top level player. I think ever since she had that amazing clay court run and really was brought to the forefront of everyone's attention a couple of years ago, and of course reached the French Open final, I think she's struggled since then with her new status, and I don't think she's tried to hide that. And she, you know, confidence is obviously a huge factor in her game. There's no doubt she has the game, but it's so affected by confidence. You know, you can see it on the court, as you say. Sometimes there just feels like there's no explanation for her losing a set 6-love. And it's obviously entirely mental. And it was very interesting seeing her play Sam Stosur in the semi-finals, because she seems to be afflicted with exactly the same problem. But Halep, by far the better that day. And although Sibulkova gave a good account of herself in the final, Halep was really strong. She was there to do business yesterday. And a very, very deserving winner. No lapses in concentration, in focus. She was there to get the job done, to get a big title ahead of Roland Garros and try to steer herself in the direction of that elusive Grand Slam, because she's good enough to win one. She is.
Talking of 6-love sets, the woman she beat, Dominika Sibulkova, in the final, actually was love 6, love 3 down against Caroline Garcia a couple of rounds earlier, and she managed to turn that round and win. And it did occur to me at that point that probably tells you something a little bit about both of those two.
Yeah, I mean, that was an extraordinary match. And in fact, I can't quite remember who it is, and I apologise because they deserve a bit of credit, but somebody tweeted at 6-love, 3-love, when Garcia went, I think, love 30 down, somebody tweeted, the whole thing's going to turn around right here. And that seemed bold at the time, and then it just started unfolding before our eyes, and it was happening.
It was definitely me who tweeted that.
Sure, David. And it was funny though. As soon as you saw Caroline Garcia lose her serve, as soon as Sibulkova got on the board, Sybil Kova seemed to know that she was completely back in the match, even though she'd only won a game and she was still a set and a break down. The whole press room seemed to know that the whole tide had turned. And lo and behold, it just fell away from Caroline Garcia. And boy, I mean, I know she's still young, but boy, has she got things to sort out. You know, talk about people struggling with the expectation on her shoulders. I mean, what a way to set yourself up going into your home Grand Slam, where, you know, the French press, I think, generally they have very good relationships with their players. They're able to have really open discussions with their players and you know, really develop good relationships with them. But, you know, they are, I think, I was going to say unforgiving, but I think that's a bit harsh. They are, you know, they're very fair judges, and I think if they see a player not fulfilling potential, they can be a bit harsh on that. You know, I know Luca Puy is somebody that's had quite a rough ride from the French press, and he's starting to get some good results now, and they're starting to ease up on him a bit. But poor Caroline Garcia, I mean, these must be slightly dark days for her, really.
Well, she's so rich in talent. I mean, it's so clearly all there in terms of the basics of her game and her physique and all the things that you would kind of want to put coordinates into a computer and produce an ideal-looking tennis player. And she just, I don't know, she does look a little bit flimsy mentally to me. I never feel completely confident that she's going to be able to see it out when she's in command of a match. It was a funny women's tournament generally, wasn't it? I mean, in the quarterfinals, there were more Romanians than there were top 20 players. There were four Romanians and just one top 20 player, and that was Simona Halep.
Yeah, it was amazing. There were two empty desks next to me throughout the beginning of the week, and on I think it was Thursday or Friday, they were being occupied by some Romanian journalists who had flown in for the very big occasion, really. And of course, a Romanian also won the men's doubles title. Horia Ticău and Jean-Julien Roger won the men's doubles title. So a very worthwhile week for them. And they were getting increasingly excited with every day that went by. That was a really nice sub-narrative to the whole week.
And they do get a heck of a following in terms of the fans around the world. When there's a Romanian player playing, there are always fans in the stands, it seems to me. I tell you, I decided, Catherine, you'll be very pleased to know, I decided to run a poll after the women's final, just to say who's going to win the French Open women's title.
And that's unpollable, David, because you need more than four options. You need to put every player, you need to put 128 players in the poll.
Well, no, but it's easily covered by my shorthand, because I had Serena Williams, Victoria Azarenka, Simona Halep, or someone else.
Right, I'm guessing someone else won.
No, someone else came second behind Victoria Azarenka. Just about creeping into third position is Serena Williams on 19%. Simona Halep on 16, someone else on 29, and Victoria Azarenka running away with it at 36%. What do you think?
I think I haven't seen Victoria Azarenka on clay yet, so I'll reserve judgment.
Well, she only played one match, didn't she? She beat Laura Robson, which I did see, actually. And Robson, great to see her hitting the ball properly again, although she has now lost in qualifying in Rome as well. I mean, it's a tough thing to come back on clay, isn't it, for her? But she was hitting the ball nicely. But Azarenka decided, I think, as much as anything, to be careful and pull out ahead of her next match when she felt a bit of a twinge.
Yeah, I mean, Rome's going to be very interesting. I do hope she plays. I think she will be very keen to play because, you know, presumably she needs the matches. I feel objectively that she needs the matches. Now she's being talked about as, well, potentially the favourite for the French Open. That's a really big deal for her to be back in that position.
And clay's not her favourite surface, so it is absolutely wide open on paper, isn't it? But Serena Williams looks like she returns next week in Rome. She's already there, seen video of her practising. It's going to be fascinating. That'll be live on BT Sport if you're in the UK, if you want to watch the tournament in Rome. I'm actually commentating there in about 9 hours' time, Catherine. I better get to bed soon. I'm going to have about 4 hours' sleep, take a train for 2 hours, and then go
That's
and commentate.
That's when you do your best work, David, after only four hours' sleep. You're like Margaret Thatcher. David Law and Margaret Thatcher, two peas in a pod.
Is that a compliment?
In some respects.
Okay, I'll assume it is one. Just a word on Rome. Have you seen the top half of the men's draw? It's hilarious. These are the names that are in the top half of the men's draw. Only two of these can be semi-finalists. Djokovic, Monfils, Raonic, Kyrgios, Nadal, Federer, and Nishikori.
It's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? Poor Federer. Poor Federer just wants to get some matches under his belt, and it's... The fates are rather conspiring against him. It's going to be very, very interesting, Rome. Really, really looking forward to being able to enjoy that week as a fan. Because looking at the draw, looking at all of the storylines going on in the men's and the women's game, it's really, really mouth-watering.
So you're bailing out of the clay court swing, Catherine. Two rungs down and you've decided not to go on the third one.
I am a bit, yeah. I mean, it's a tough slog doing Madrid and Rome back to back. I did it last year. There were an awful lot of journalists leaving the press room tonight at a similar time to me, at around about 11 p.m. who have flights to Rome at 9 o'clock-ish tomorrow morning, as I did last year. And as wonderful as I think Rome will be, I can't honestly say that I was envious of them. But maybe I will be, you know, midway into next week when the heat wave in London has faded and Rome is looking glorious on the telly. Maybe I will change my mind. But it's a tough slog.
Tough slog. Sitting there watching tennis for a living. Oh, I don't know. These people. First of all, David Law's talking about commentary being this slog. Now Catherine Whittaker's moaning about going to Rome and Madrid.
Yeah, first world problems on the tennis podcast.
Absolutely. Now, if you haven't already heard, the Aegon Championships at the Queen's Club has announced its strongest ever field of players, with 16 of the world's top 30 playing. So it is going to be a heck of a draw. Is that your next tournament, Catherine, or do you go to the French Open?
I will be going to Paris, so I'm not permanently bailing out of the clay court swing. I'm just preserving myself in order to peak at the big events, David, like all the greats do.
Whereas I've just basically withdrawn from the French Open. I don't go there. Incidentally, as well, 15 of the world's top 30 are going to be in Birmingham, my hometown, for the Aegon Classic, for the women's tournament, which is the same week as Queen's. Loads going on there. The match I'm doing tomorrow morning, Catherine, is Coco Vandeweghe against Venus Williams. I love watching Coco Vandeweghe because she is a bit volatile, and if she gets angry, my word, the rackets know about it.
Yeah, she pushes all of your aggro buttons, doesn't she, David?
Oh, she's brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. And the return of Venus Williams. We haven't seen her around for a while, so look forward to that. But I think Rome's going to be a really interesting tournament on both sides. And, well, it feels a little bit like normal service has resumed. That Jiří Veselý loss suddenly feels like quite a long time ago for Djokovic. Greg Rozetsky was on Sky today saying that he thinks that could actually help Djokovic. I mean, personally, I don't think anything can hurt Djokovic just at the moment unless he gets injured. He just seems to be cruising along just fine, and Catherine now is going to cruise over to the United Kingdom and get back where she belongs for a week as well, like you, Catherine. And have about how much sleep do you intend to have over the next 7 days?
Not very much at all. Over the next 7 days, an extraordinary amount of sleep, David. It's what I do. If you think I do podcasting well, which you probably don't, I mean, I do sleeping 10 times better than I do podcasting.
Did you get any tennis in yourself this week ahead of our big match?
I did. Of course not, David. A, don't need the practice. B, not had the time. But C, point A.
Okay, fine. Well, you know, it's your loss. You're the one who's going to suffer as a result of it. But anyway, Catherine, lovely to talk to you in sunny Madrid. Do have a safe trip home, and we will speak to you soon here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with the Telegraph.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.